Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Today's Daf Yomi is Bechiras Memches. We begin right on top of the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Misha Loi Bechiras. So a fellow whose wife had not yet given birth, it's her first. V'yolda Shnei Zucharim, and she gives birth to twin boys. Okay, so one is a Bechir, and one is the second comer. We don't know which one is which. So he owes one. Pidyon HaBen. No, he's saying, Hey, Slayim L'Kayin. Okay, so even though you can't identify the first one, but you know, between the two of them, one of them is firstborn, and the father transfers five Selah to the Kayin on account of the Bechir, whichever he is. Now, suppose one of these newborns passes away before the obligation had been activated, before 30 days. So the chiyuv of Pidyon HaBen only arrives at 30 days. It's still before, and one child passes away. So now, Ha'av Potter, father's exempt completely, because perhaps it was the Bechir that passed away. Fine. Meisav, suppose it's the other way around. The father passes away before doing any Pidyon HaBen. We have the kids right here. They're ready to make their own Pidyon HaBen. The question is, are they even obligated? You don't know which one to claim. Well, you go to Reuben, he says, no, it's my brother. You approach Shimon, he shifts it back to Reuben. So do they have to or not? Rami or Imer? Well, it depends. Im nosnu, ach loy cholku, nosnu. If they transfer the five cells to the coin before they divided the father's estate, nosnu, okay, whatever is given is given. And the Parshim explained, even if they haven't yet given. The point of the mission is, if it's still before division of the estate, okay, the father was obligated to give one set of pidyon on account of both of them, so the estate is obligated. And in turn, they're obligated as well to offer one set of $5. Vimlav, but otherwise, let's say they've already divided the property. To each his own. Which one are you going to claim? Who are you going to approach? Each one will shift it on the other one. Vimlav, Batur, Rabbi Da'imer, no, in Schaib Nusach, Chasim. The assets have already been tagged, have already been obligated. During the father's lifetime, Rashi says, like a bal chayv, like money that he owes, like any borrower who owes money, and therefore they have to pay off the father's debt. Rashi says on the fifth line, v'chayav on the fray ben shnei, between the both of them, work it out, you got to pay up your father's debt. Okay, now Zachor Nekeva, suppose his wife gives birth to twins, but this time it's boy and girl, and it's unknown which one was first. So it's possible the girl was first. Enkan, the kohen klum, the kohen gets nothing in this case. Now let's go back to the first. Twin boys, one Bechir, one is not. Identity unknown. Father passes away. Mishnah says, according to her mayor, well, if it's still before division of the assets, yeah, they're chai, but otherwise they're pot. Now, what about the timing factor? When did he pass away? Before 30 days? In which case, the chiv was not yet activated, or after 30 days? The mis ha'av, emas, when did he pass away? Ilayim the mis lachar lamadiyam, it's past 30 days. So the chiv has already been activated on his assets. Baha amar amir ki chol kaputurin. In this case, Rabbi would say, if they go out and divide their pata, why? It's too late. Baha shtadu nirsi. The nechas matter had already been obligated. It's too late. Rashi says, the chayv ma'al yehu. It's a legitimate debt. I mean, how could they absolve themselves of their father's debt? Shtabul nichsi. El debis b'teich lamed yoyim. Oh, apparently he passed away within 30 days before the chayv had been chal, before it took effect. Now it's their money, the kid's money. But Maishno Kichok, so what difference does it make whether they already divided the properties? Where Ramir says they're potter. Why? Because you're a monkey in the middle. Who are you gonna claim from? I mean, each son will shift it on the other one. The Ozel Gabi Hai, if the Kohen would approach Reuven, Umatchle, he will shift him to Shimon. The Ozel Gabi Hai goes to Shimon, Matchle, push him away. So there's no way to claim. So Kilei Cholkinami. Well, the same exact scenario would unfold even before they divide. Who are you going to claim from? Who are you going to collect from? Each one will turn around and say, it's my brother. Lezel Gabi Hai, approach this fellow, Lethchaye. He'll reject you. But Lezel Gabi Hai, go to the other one, Lethchaye, push you away as well. So why is Ramir obligating the sons? Who are you going to obligate? Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Zois Aymeres. So we learn from here an interesting chiddush. Suppose you have two people, Shnei Yosef and Shimon. Both people are named Yosef and Shimon. Shoy Yibir Ach is living in the same city. You know you borrowed from one of them. You have a loan document on a fellow Yosef and Shimon. $1 million loan. Now, don't know if it's this fellow or this fellow. So truthfully, you can't really approach each individual separately because each one will deflect it to the other one. But let's say, if it so happens, they embarked, the two Yosef and Shimonites, decided to embark on a partnership. They purchased a property together. They bought a field b'shutfus. Lucky balchayv. Now you can go collect half the property on account of the Yosef and Shimon who owes them money. Look, you're right. I can't pinpoint which one it is, but I do know that my Yosef and Shimon has partial only half ownership on this property. Balchayv goyva oisa mehem. Normally, because you can say, look, yeah, I'm not really sure who I'm collecting from, but it's between both of you that I'm owed the money. So I can collect at least up until 50% of this property, which belongs to my debtor. The Amalek, as you can tell him, Ibe de Dachma Sikna, if my claim is on you, okay, I'm collecting yours. Mansa, your portion, the Dach yours, because Shikon, I'm taking yours. Ibe Chavrachma Sikna, if I'm claiming on your friend, Mansa de Chavrachma Shikon, okay, I'm taking his part. So either way, he can walk away with half the property. So the same could be said over here. Look, between the two sons, one owes the money to the Kohen, so the Kohen can now collect on that debt from the joint estate, because inevitably he's owed that money by one of these partners. I'm a Rava, says Rava, I don't understand. How could you go ahead and collect in this manner? The fact is, you know, the privilege to collect from one's assets. What's that based on? The fellow owes you money, not his assets. The answer is, it's like an uri, like a guarantor. Like, you know, you sign on a loan, sign up as a guarantor. One's properties are his guarantors. They back up for the person. Person doesn't pay, his house pays. Okay. Now, in the case of the Yosef ben Shimon, I understand. The owing fellow knows deep down in his heart that he owes the money. He knows who he is, right? So he should be paying. He's just trying to, you know, wiggle out, so you go to his properties, wherever it is. But in this case of the Bahar, it's an unknown. It's inherently unknown. It's a perpetual suffix. You don't know. So technically, you could never go after them. And they themselves don't even know. They're not chayv to pay. So how could you go ahead and collect on their properties? You can't go to the person. How can you go to the property, which is just backing up for the person? Amr of a Michte, look, Nichse de Barinish. Nichse de Nchasim, the Barinish of a person. Why are they obligated? In an Arvin Bay, they're like his Arev, back up the person. Miyikamide, how could you have a situation till the day You can't be Tavia the day the person himself or the Arev Matzi Tava, like you can go collect from the Arev, but now we have a Mishnah with a real Arev. You can't do that. Hamal v'sahaveroi, I the Arev, if a fellow lends money using a guarantor, so there's a guarantor involved, well, from an Arev, you can't collect from the Arev. B'kamilam, we learn that the Mishnah means to say, from an Arev t'chila, you can't go to the Arev first, unless you first make an attempt to collect from the loyve, from the borrower, and he doesn't have. Okay, so then, next step is the Arev, but he's only there to back up the obligation of the loyve. But in our case, with the loyve himself, so to speak, the Bukhar himself has no obligation, how can he go collect from the properties? Ella, my Rabbi says, Rabbi, I'll tell you what's going on in the Mishnah. Truthfully, the father passed away after 30 days since birth, in which case, the obligation, the chi of the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen has already been activated on his properties. So now, when it gets transferred to his kids, those kids have to satisfy their father's debt, which already been applied on the property. Now, if you have ample properties to satisfy the whole five selah, of course, it would be no question the kohen would take the $5 and go home. So there's no question. So here we understand because the property is there to back up the loan, the obligation that the father had already been committed to. Of course, the kohen would take the full amount. So what's the machlekes about in the Mishnah? You know what we're talking about? There isn't enough to go around. You only have five selah in total on the full estate, only five selah, which is actually the full amount of Pidyon HaBen, but you can't give it to the kohen. He doesn't have a right to collect on the full amount. You know why? Now, in trying to explain the machlokes in the Mishnah, right? Rameir says that if they haven't yet divided the properties and it's still in the father's name, so to speak, then you have to, you know, forward the money to the kohen. Rabbi just says no. And otherwise, Rameir says if once they divided it, they're exempt. Rabbi just says either way. Rabbi just says they have to pay. So how do we explain the machlokes? So again, we're speaking that the father already been obligated. It's already passed 30 days. As in the chosim, his properties have already been tagged. Now he passed away, right? Got transfers to his kids. And they divided the properties. And there isn't really enough to go around. There's only five selah all around between both brothers. Okay. So that's the first notion. Next, udukuli amba islu de Ravasi. Everybody, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, are aligned with Ravasi's explanation, his definition of how inheritance works. Damar Vasi, Rasi says like this, you know, you can consider Yerusha in two ways. Two brothers divide the father's estate. How are we going to understand it? So Reuben gets half, Shimon gets the other half. Was this meant for them initially? Bashkacha Pratis, it was meant for them, right? You say, the Yerusha went directly from the father to the Reuben on this part, and likewise, this part from father to Shimon. Or do you say, no, it's really, you know, a collective entity. And they have to go ahead and sort of negotiate, so to speak, between themselves. Okay, I'll take this part instead of you taking, you know, you'll take that part instead of me, and I'll take this, right? They're sort of swapping. Because really, each one of two brothers has a full right to each granule of property. So it's sort of like a swap. It's like almost like a purchase. An exchange. You're allowing me your part in this half for my part in your half. So Ravasi says, I'm really not sure which way. Was it initially meant for them, or is there a swap going on? Then Ravasi, I'm not sure, and therefore we treat it like part and part. Hachan Shechalku, two brothers divide property. Mechzo Yorshin, Mechzo Lekuches. So we'll consider half Yerusha, like direct inheritance in the father, and half like a transaction. Which means to say, he's a suffix, he's not sure how to deal with it. So we give it an element of this and that, okay? Now, next point to know, Udukuliyam will agree, move Haksu Batera, a loan, so to speak, an obligation, which was dictated by the Torah, Rashi says on the Yemen Beiski, when Pidin HaBen, Heisloim, which the Torah granted to the Kohen, love Kiksuva Bishtar Dami. It's not considered like it was formalized in the document. Rather, it's like a verbal commitment. It doesn't have the same teeth as a verbal as a formal document, which allows you to collect from, to impose a lien on the property and collect from purchasers who purchased the property from your borrower after the loan, right? So it doesn't give you that ability. You can only collect from the person himself or his yerushim, but not from. But Dukuli Alma, next point to know. Everybody holds Isul de Rav Papa. They go with Rav Papa, who tells us another rule. Damar Papa, Milva al peh. If it's a verbal loan only, Gavi ben Yerushin. So you have the right to collect from the principal and from his Yerushin if he passes away. But Ve'ena Gavi ben Kuchas, you can't collect from the Kuchas. That's unfair, because how would they know that, you know, this money was borrowed by the father? They're going to buy property instantly. So you can't do it unless it's a shtar, which makes it public knowledge and spreads awareness about this loan, and buyers beware. But otherwise, you can't turn around and collect from the Kuchas. So now a case. It's a matter of collecting the five sella, which we said is a mulva b'toira, which is not like a shtar. So it's like a verbal commitment, which allows you to collect from Yerushim, not from buyers. So let's fast forward. We have these two brothers who divided the property, and we explained that according to Rav Asi, it's considered partial Yerusha, from which the kain can collect, right? But partial is lekucha, it's like partially purchased from each other. So it's partially lekuchas, which leaves the kain out of the equation. You can't collect from lekuchas. So now, of the total inheritance, which is only five sela, you could at most access only 2.5 sela, the part that's considered Yerusha. The question is, when the coin is granted the ability to collect five sela, what if he can't collect five? Can he collect even 2.5, or is it just five or nothing? That's the machlik. It's Rav Meir's sub. Rav Meir says it's either five or nothing. In this case, you can't collect five. You can't collect half of five, so you're out. Rav Meir's sub, he says no. Even though ideally you collect five chamish, but if you can't get what you could, and that explains why Rabbi Yehuda holds that even in this case the kohen has access to at least whatever he can collect. So in concept, Rabbi Yehuda agrees to Rav Meir that, you know, the most he can collect is 2.5, but he allows you to do that. So the question is the wordiology. If that's the case, Rabbi Yehuda, why does Rabbi Yehuda respond to Rav Meir? He should have said, okay, I'll give him even 2.5. No, he uses the words neschayv nechasim, which sounds like he's making a revolution. No, we have a different approach to the whole thing than a chasim archayv. He could have simply said chayv gavra, the person's chayv to give whatever he gives. I mean, boy, that's how he should have responded to Rav Meir, if it's not a conceptual, fundamental difference of opinion here. V'oitani, here comes another kasha on Rav's understanding of the machlekes. V'abraiso, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, in this case, Ha'achanu, we have two brothers, one of them being a Bechor, but identity unknown. Shechok, now they divided the father's assets after his passing. Are they obligated? Well, it depends how much money there is in total. In Yesh Asora Azuz Lazeh, if this brother ended up with 10 Zuz, 10 Zuz being 2.5 Sela, because each Sela is 4 Zuz, Vasora Azuz Lazeh likewise. His brother received 10 zuz, so it's 5 sela in total between both of them. Chayavin, they're obligated to do the pedin haben. Bimlav, otherwise, if there's less than that in total, then they are both exempt peturin. End quote. Now, what exactly did he mean? My asara zuz lazeh. The asara zuz lazeh. What does he mean when he says 10 zuz per person? Ilema, does he mean bein di rusha, bein di lekuchas? That this is the total amount encompassing all elements of this inheritance. The part that we consider a Yerusha, which is subject to this obligation of Pidin HaBen, right? Ben Lekuchos, and it also encompasses the Lekuchos part, the transactional, purchased, so to speak, part, which is not bound to the Pidin HaBen, as we explained before. So in total we have 5, but in reality they will only have to transfer 2.5 as per the Yerusha element. How? Because although ideally you meant to get 5, v'chamish, v'afilu chamatzi chamish, even if you have half that amount or even less, you're obligated. Okay, so is that what Rabbi Yehuda means? He means to say that I disagree with Rabbi Meir. That five is five, and any less than that has no purpose. Even if it's less than five, give what you could. If that's the correct explanation, Yachi, so why does he specifically cite the number 10 zuz for a total of 5 sela? Any amount, basically, would obligate you. Yachi, if that's the case, if you can obligate on even less than 5, Yachi, mayir yachasara. Why specify that each one ended up with 10 zuz? For a total of 5, from which only 2.5 is given, why pin yourself down on that amount? Even if each fellow ends up with less than 10 zuz, in which case the total amount less than 5 sela, in which case the amount that will be given to the coin will be less than 2.5. The amount is irrelevant. You meant to give whatever you could. Ella, pshita. Apparently we're mistaken in our understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's position. Because when he says Asara Zuz, he meant Asara Zuz, the Yerusha Lazeh. He was referring specifically only to the Yerusha element within this inheritance. The part that is bound to the Kohen, that part that is obligated. And he meant that each brother received a total of 10 Zuz, i.e. 2.5 Sela, of Yerusha. Asara Zuz, Dirusha Lazet to this brother, Vasara Zuz, Dirusha Lazet to the other brother. So, 10 to you, which means 5 Sela in total, of Yerusha, which is only 50% of the inheritance. Which has another half, which is the Lekuchais element, which is another 5 Sela. So in total is 10 Sela, 5 of which is bound to the Kohen, because it's considered Yerusha. And in fact, the Kohen will get a full 5. And only then are you obligated, because you can achieve the proper pinyon with the proper amount. Alma, apparently, Chamish, the Torah is number 5, is as is. V'lo yechatzi Chamish, you have to do 5, no less. Any less doesn't cut it. Rabbi also agrees to this concept. In contrast to Rava's explanation, that only Rabbi Meir insists on 5, but Rabbi allows even less than 5. Ella, you're right. If I switch around the whole explanation, apparently all agree to this concept. Pidin Haben can only be executed with 5 Sela. If you have less than that, don't even try. Even Rabbi agrees to that. We see that from the way he presents this scenario. And you're only obligated if you have enough to go around. So what then is the machlekes about? Ramirez says, well, if you can end up less than 5, don't bother. Why does Rabbi obligate them? Rashi explains, there were a couple of givens, a couple of notions, a couple of premises that we were working with. So all agree, it's got to be 5 and no less. But there was a question of how to classify this inheritance. Is it completely bound to the Fidin HaBen, like any Yerusha, or is it considered Lekucha, it's like purchased? That was one question. Right? So perhaps Rabbi disagrees on that. He says, no, it's completely considered a Yerusha, so it's completely Mishubat, it's bound to the Pidin HaBen, so you're not lacking funds. Rav Papa, there was another aspect that we spoke about, Rav Papa's point, that the Milva Alper, this sort of verbal obligation, you can't access Lekuchas. Perhaps he'll hold that you could. So even if part of the inheritance is considered lekuchos, as if they exchange it and they purchase from each other, it's still bound to Pidin HaBen. Okay, so there's machlekes, but not regarding whether you can get away with partial payment. Everyone agrees partial doesn't work. Rabbi Yehuda says you have enough to go around because it's all bound to the Pidin HaBen. In contrast to Rav Meir, who says no, only the Yerusha part, not the lekuchos part, inevitably you end up with less than 5, it doesn't work. So this was the first version of this discussion that was related to Rav Meir, and the question was, how does this work? We explained based on Rava, right? Rava presented that we're speaking the right. So we have two brothers, one of them a Bechor. The father has to afford one set of 5 selah. Now, if the father died, Rava explained he died after 30, so the Nechasim were already obligated. And the question is whether the brothers have to afford the 5 selah. Ramir says no, because ultimately, well, you know, once they divided it, it's already a partial lekuchais, and you can end up with only 2.5 selah to the kind. Rabbi says, forward the full 5 to the kind. Bigger the masna, save a sum, apply this whole discussion to the second part, meaning to the words of Rabbi Yehuda, who says, even in this case, when the father passed away and they already divided, the assets are obligated, no exemptions. And the question was, the Misa Av Emas, when, at what point did the father die? The Mes Lachal Shleish, did he die after 30 days? In which case, the obligation already kicked in, and the assets already chayiv. Mechlal, the Remeir, Savak, Chalka Paturin. Okay, that's good according to Rabbi Yehuda, but why does Remeir disagree? He says, just because they divided the assets, their potter, too late. Hayishtab di lu nichsi, the nechasim were already tagged, already chayim. El b'tech shleish. Apparently he died before the chiv was activated, before 30 days passed. So the question is, good, Rabbi is good, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, ki cholka my chayim Rabbi Yehuda, so now if they split the assets, why should we say they have to pay? Who are you going to go to? Who are you going to claim? You're going to go to Reuven, he'll deflect it to Shimon. He'll go to Shimon, he'll say, no, Reuven is the Bechor, not me. Lezel Gabehai, the Kohen approaches Reuven, Litchai, he'll shift him over to his brother. Gabehai approaches Shimon, Litchai, he'll send him to Reuven. I'm Rabbi Yirmiya, says Amira, says Ramir, we learn from here an interesting concept. Shnei Yisrael ben Shimon, show you Bir Echad. So you lent money to a fellow Yisrael ben Shimon, so it happens there were two people of the same name in the town, and each one is denying that he's the one. So in the meantime, you're stuck. You can't really approach either. So it happens that you're tracking them, and one Yehuda ben Shimon purchased a property from the other one. So now we have a right to collect either way. So the Balchayiv can come and collect from him. Why? He says, look, either way, I'm good. If you're my leiva, hand it over. If the seller is my leiva, then he had no right selling you something which was leaned to me. Even the Sikna, if it's on you that I have my claim, Mansa, the portion, the Dach of yours, your portion, I'm taking, I'm collecting your portion, you owe it to me. If my claim is on your good friend, the seller, well, guess what? Well, this property was bound to me before it sold to you. So likewise over here, it's true that the father was out of the picture before the chiyuv kicked in, and one of these sons are chayiv to pay. But now that they divided and they sort of, allocated the assets. And Raj explains that Rabbi Yehuda will hold, according to this approach, Rabbi Yehuda will hold that it's lekuchas. We don't say, well, whatever you ended up with was meant for you. We say, listen, it's one big pot, and they're sort of flipping and exchanging with each other. You take this part, I take that part, right? It's like a deal, it's like a sale. Okay, but ultimately, whatever is in your hands is bound to me regardless, whether you're the bachar or whether your brother who gave it to you gave you something which was bound to the Kayan, so I have a right to collect it. On this, Rava had a kash, I'm a Rava, so this is very similar to the previous version. Michti, look, I mean, if you can't approach and claim from the person directly, then you can't access his assets either. His assets are just a security to back up the person's obligations. If you can't successfully collect from the person, how can you go to his assets? And the person you can't access because you don't even know who owes you the money. Michti, look, nichsoy debar inish in an arvin bay. A person's assets are his ore, his guarantors. And then we proceeded just as the first version with all the kashas and the answers, and we explained, Ramir's opinion and Rav Yehuda's opinion the same way we concluded in the first version. Okay, so in a nutshell, we have a Mishnah where it's her first time giving birth, twins, one is a Bechor, we simply don't know which one, so if one died within 30 days, the father's exempt. Maybe the Bechor died, but if the children are alive and well, and the father's one who died, and the children are around, Rav Yehuda says, go ahead and between both of them, you're entitled to collect. Ramir says, well, it depends. Before division, yeah, but after division, they're potter. And we had a lengthy explanation to understand these shittas. Says the next Mishnah. Now we have Shtei Noshim, Shlei Bichru. Rashi says, Shtei Noshim, Shal Echad. Okay, one husband, Yaakov, and he had two wives, Rachel and Leah. Shlei Bichru, it's the first time giving birth. The older Shnei Scharim. Mazal tov, each one had a firstborn son. Okay, so he knows. Both are Bechayrim, no question there. Noisen, Yutzlam, the Kohen, $10 to the Kohen. Meis Echad Mem Tech Shleishim Yoim. Okay, so now, tragedy struck, and one passed away within 30 days. Before he was obligated in Pidyon HaBen. So the father, for some reason, I already gave the money ahead, advance payment for the Pidyon HaBen. How this works, we'll see tomorrow on tomorrow's daf how this works. But he forwarded the money pending the child's arriving at day 30 alive and well, at which point the Pidyon HaBen will kick in. But unfortunately, the child died before that point. So the father is entitled to a refund. But it really depends. Im l'koyin echad nasan. If he gave the full 10 selah to one kohen, then he has a right to demand a refund, a partial refund on 5. Ya'asher le'chamish shleim, the kohen refunds him $5. But v'imashne kohanim nosan, suppose he gave the 10 selah to two kohanim. Now, each kohen can claim, the money I have is for the live child. Because you didn't label them, right? Even though one passes away, he has no way to get his money back. Because each one can say, look, I'm the one that's holding the money for the rightful Pidyon HaBen. Zachar or Nekeva. Okay, back to the same story. We have Yaakov, the husband, with Rachel and Leah, two wives, first timers. We have double Mazal Tov, but a Zachar or Nekeva. So only one is a Bechor, right? Zachar or Nekeva, Oishnei Zachar or Nekeva, or we have a total of three. Two boys and a nekeva. In this case, we don't know whether he owes for one, or maybe even for two. We don't know who came out first. Noisin chamesh shloim lekayin. He owes $5 to the kayin. So, as we're going to see in this Mishnah, the recurring theme here is that when there is an unknown, you're exempt. Which is an interesting point, because really, Pidyon HaBen, true, there's a monetary aspect to it, as per the payment to the kohen, but it's really a Torah obligation. You can say it's like Isser v'Heter, it's a chiyuv, a personal obligation to satisfy the pidyon on the bechor. But apparently, we see that the chiyuv of the father really hinges upon the monetary element of this process. So if there's any uncertainty, any suffix, for which we would apply, in general, monetary matters, we would apply the concept of Amoitzi Mechaber Odoraya, the one who's looking to extract money has to prove his claim, and in absence of such proof, the fellow's exempt. Likewise, we would apply that concept here as well. So sort of the starting point is the monetary aspect, and if you're potter, then there's no chiv at all for Pidyon HaBen. Interesting. Okay, so since you don't know, Zachar Nekeva, Shnei Nekeva, it could well be that there were two Bechirim, and maybe not, maybe it's only one, so $5. Shtei Nekevas of Zachar, in the case we had two girls and a boy, which case it could be that the Zohar came out second, or Shnei Zohar, Shnei Nekevas, or two Zohar and two Nekevas, likewise. It could be that there is no firstborn boy. Ain't Kan, the Kohen Klum, the Kohen gets nothing. Achas Bichro, Vachash Le Bichro. The same husband, two wives. One Bichro is a veteran, one is a first timer. Yoldo Shnei Zohar, and the Mazal Tov, two boys. Rashi, by the way, explains, but Machpe, this whole thing happened in a dark room, in a cave, and it was a mix-up. We don't know which boy, which girl, who came from which mother, right? We have two boys. So he gives five selos to the Kohen on account of the one Bechor. Ultimately, there was one Bechor, right? Meis Echad Mehem. Now, suppose one dies before 30 days. Could be the Bechor died. And therefore, Av Potter, father's exempt. Mesav, suppose the kids are alive, but the father passed away. Vabonim Chayaman, the children are alive, now they're Bar Mitzvah, they want to take care of the Pidna Ben. We don't know which one is Chayav, but between both of them, there is one Chayav for that Bechor, Ramei Omer. So this is the same exact as the previous Mishnah. Im Nosnu Asher L'Chalku Nosnu, if they paid before they divided the assets, fine. Which means to say that the assets are still in the father's estate, they have to pay. Because the father's obligation to address the pidyon on one of these sons carries over to the assets, even though he's no longer around, you'll have to turn. Otherwise, once they divide it, they're out. As we explained in the previous Gemara. Rabbi Da'imer, no, Mishchayim Nechasim, the assets are obligated, which means to say they have to pay for one pidyon aben. Zohar Nekeva. So back to this case where one woman is a veteran, and one is a first timer, and they gave birth to a zecher and a keva. We don't know which one what. In this case, ein kan l'kayin klum. The kayin doesn't get anything because it could be that the first time he gave birth to the keva, there's no bechor. Part two of the Mishnah. Shtei noshim, shtel shnei noshim. Here we have two husbands and two wives. Okay, so each husband has his wife. Shtei noshim, shel shnei noshim, shlo bichru, and both mothers are first timers. We all do bezcharim. They gave birth to two boys. And again, we don't have the identities. We don't know which mother gave birth to which kid, right? But we know there are two Sukharim in total. Inevitably, each father owes for his kid. Zenoisin Chamish Shleim, the Kohen. So he gives five sela to the Kohen. Zenoisin Chamish Shleim, the Kohen. He pays five sela to the Kohen. Meis Echad Mehem Tech Shleishim. Suppose one of these two infants died before 30. So he's certainly exempt. And they're due a refund. If they paid in advance, right? Im the kohen echad nosnu, both fathers gave their pidyon to the same kohen, so he knows that he's holding an extra $5. Yachshu lehem has to give them back the $5, and presumably they split it between themselves, right? Yachshu lehem chamish lehem. V'im l'shnei kohen nosnu, suppose Reuben gave his $5 to one kohen, and Shimon gave it to the other kohen. Einon. Now, even though one of the children died, they have no way to extract their money because each kohen can deflect the claim and say, look, I'm holding the rightful money, the one of the survivor. Zohar Nekeva. Okay, so back to this case where the two husbands, right, had each one his wife, and they were first-timers. And they gave birth to a Zohar and a Keva. Zohar is certainly a Bechor, is obligated in, but the Keva is Potter. But we don't know who's the father of the Zohar. In this case, obviously, Peturin, both fathers are exempt. But that only pertains to them. The boy himself, ultimately, has to address his Pidna Ben obligation when he grows up, because he's a Bechor. He can't pin it on his father, who's unknown, but personally, he's got to take care of a ben chayiv luftesis atzmai. Now, let's say shtei nekevas v'zachar. The woman gave birth to two nekevas and a zachar. It could be that there's no firstborn boy. Or shtei nekevas v'shnei zachar, or two nekevas and two zachar. In this case, ein kan l'kohen klum, the kohen gets nothing. Suppose achas bichra, achas shlei bichra. One had already given birth in the past, and for the other one, it's a first time. Each one had her own husband. And they both gave birth to boys. And we don't know whose son is which. So the fellow whose husband had not yet given birth, he knows it's her first time. He knows that somewhere in this mix he has his bechor. He has to send the check to the kohen. Nice and chamish lam the kohen. But let's say zochar nekeva, they gave birth to a zochar nekeva. Since we don't know who's to who, ain't kan the kohen klum, kohen gets nothing. Because it could very well be that the nekeva came from the first timer, in which case there's no bechor. Now let's zero in on the second part of the Mishnah. The two husbands of these two wives, both first-timers, both gave birth to boys. Each father has to afford five sela to the kohen. If one son died prematurely, died within 30 days. So it depends. If each father gave his five sela to his own kohen, so now we have two kohanim, each one with $5, there's no way to demand a refund because each kohen can claim that he has the rightful money. But if it was the same kohen recipient, he owes them a refund of $5. Ask the Gemara, what is the difference? Why is it that when we have two separate kohanim, each one in receipt of five sela, there's no way to extract your money? Because if you approach this kohen, you'll send them to the other kohen. Why are you coming to me? He's the one that has your money. He goes to the other coin, Matchil, send him to this coin. That's understood. Well, the same is Koyin Echot Nami. Suppose both fathers gave the money to the same coin. Now, one of the children died. We don't know which father is the one demanding the refund. So the coin can turn to him and say, look, you have no business claiming a refund. Your child is alive and well. Well, you also have, right? He can sort of deflect just as well. Kohen Echad Nami, Lezel L'gabei. So if the fellow goes to this Kohen, Hai, so this fellow goes to this Kohen, V'tchaye, he can send them packing. Lezel L'gabei, Zagirsh L'gabei, with the extra Hay, L'gabei to him. So he'll go to the other kohen, hi, the other father, hi, will go to the gabay to this kohen, with chayi, can send them flying. So why is this any better? Amar Shmuel. No. Here, they can make a joint agreement. Turn to the next amit. Baba Arsha. Arsha means, as she says on the top line, Shnei avos kasvu Arsha ech l'chaveri. Arsha is like a POA, he's authorizing. It's either me or you, right? I'm authorizing you to collect on my behalf. Continues Rashi, Ubo Bal Arsha v'tavim imanavshach. So the fellow walks in with the Arsha, approaches the kohen, says, look, you owe me the money regardless. If it's mine, certainly. Im shali hach shali shali, if it belongs to me. Shali meis, if the son was mine, so refund me the $5. V'im shal chaver meis, if the child who died was my friend's, okay, then he's asking me to collect on his behalf. Ask the Gemara, Harsha? To collect money? They say, look, Hasfidan, Adracht is like a Harsha, I'm a Tathli. On properties, on real estate, you can do the Harsha, because you know it's there, it's collectible, it looks legit, but on Metathlin, on movables, on monies, we don't get involved in issuing the harsha. Rashi says, because on the fourth line, Rashi says, the hoil of einon be'en mechzik hashikr, since the metatlan is not tangible, it's not visible, it's not obvious that it's shem ein biyadim mishal zeh klum v'chasim yisahad yashikr. We don't get involved in signing this. It looks like possible falsehood, because who says the money's really here? It says, right? So how could he do it on money? Says the Gemara, hani milecha de kafrei. When do we hesitate to do the harsha in this type of case, when he denied the claims, so we don't really know if it's around, so we don't want to get involved in formulating documents on something which could very well not exist, not really be collectible. But in the case where he then denied So he lent the guy money, he admits to the yellow, he's not denying it. So in this case, there's no reason to hesitate to write a harshah, and likewise over here, nobody's denying anything. It's just a question of who has a right to collect. Okay, so joint forces, they team up, they make the harshah, and they go to the kohen, he has to pay him back. Zochor nekeva, ha'aveis paturin, the Bach changes to ha'aveis paturin, so that's the next case in the Mishnah. We have the two fathers, right? Each one with his wife, first timers. They gave birth to a boy and a girl. So the son, wherever he is, he has to ultimately be paid himself when he grows up. But there's no way to pin it on the father, because each father can claim, I'm the one with the nekeva. Tani Rav Huna. Rav Huna added in his brayso another example, another case to this picture. Shnei zechorim unekeva. Ein kan lekoyin klum. In this very case, we had two fathers, two mothers, and there was two zecharim and a keva, and everything got mixed up. Ein kan lekoyin klum. Kohen is not entitled to anything. And in this case, we take it a step further. Even the boys don't have to address their own chiyuv, because we don't even know what happened. Maybe it's just a safek bechor. It could very well be that first of all, it could be that in this case, look, there's certainly one Bechor. Two Zecharim and a Keva. So we have one woman gave birth to the Keva, fine. Now the boys, well, certainly one boy is the firstborn boy, right? But we don't know who he is. Right? Each one can say, no, it's the other one. I'm the second birth. So in this case, even the boys themselves are pata when they grow up. In contrast to the previous case, that inevitably there was a bechor there, but the father couldn't be pinned down. But here, even amongst the two boys, we don't know which one is the bechor. So they're pata. Maybe I'm not the bechor, maybe he's the bechor. Ain't kind of looking clue. So the question is, why did our Mishnah delete this case? Why wasn't this included in the variables? But Tana Didan, the answer is because it's true, he's not disagreeing with the fact, but it's because of symmetry considerations. You see, if you look back at the Mishnah, all the cases in the second part, which we're speaking about Shtei Nashim of Tu Anashim, right, two husbands and two wives, were really mirrored, they matched the cases in the first part, where we were two wives of the same husband. So we were just looking for sort of a matching symmetry. That's why we didn't bring in this case. But in reality, of course, we agreed to it. The Tana done our Tana didn't list it amongst the cases given the Mishnah Anoshim Mishkachas. So since this halacha only applies in this type of case where there were, you know, two fathers, who the Mishkachas then it's applicable. Bish echod Mishnah Anoshim Mishkachas. But if this same case would have happened with one husband and his two wives, it wouldn't work, because ultimately the father would have to pay out at least one pidyon for one bechor who's in this mix. So it would not have really fit into the slot in the first part of the Mishnah. That's why the Mishnah did not mention it, because it wouldn't be a matching, you know, result. In the first case, with the father being just one, you would have to pay. In the second case, it would be part of, so it's not exactly a symmetrical type of case. That's why it wasn't mentioned, but in theory, of course, he agrees to the halacha. So interesting, we see an interesting concept that whenever there's some sort of suffix in matters of pidyon haben, you go lekula. And at times, the father is part of, but the child would have to pay up for himself when he grows up to address his chiyuv of pidyon haben. Okay? All the best to you and hatzlacha.